be taking no advantage whatsoever of the electronic features, except that I didn't have to print anything.
Hit the red button.
You could probably get this talk by averaging the three previous talks and the talk from Dimitri and Nick tomorrow morning. But as you've seen from all the systematics checks, redundancy is really good. So you will hopefully learn all the extra things. This will be a sort of schizophrenic talk. I'm going to talk a bit about, we'll step back and think about the pipeline, the data analysis pipeline from a bit of a global viewpoint. Then, because this is the official title of my talk, I will talk about cosmological parameters for maxima and delve briefly into the wonderful agreement between Maxima 1 and Boomerang 98, which you will hear more in detail and in speculation about tomorrow from some combination of Dimitri Prigozhin and Nick Song. This paper will be coming out soon. Basically, the interesting thing is how huge this author list is. This is why we can't get things like the definition of the beam uncertainty right when we're talking. It's all written down somewhere, but we don't really remember. Any individual is just a small part of this. But these are basically the full Maxima 1 and Boomerang teams, all on some forthcoming paper, which will be out soon. A little historical overview, like John started with.
Kobe DMR team.
Email. This is the state of the art not terribly long ago, actually, at the beginning of this year. So the important things are that, what do you see? Well, we saw that there was a pretty good hint, more than a hint, of a peak here at L of a couple hundred, and that the statistical weight is dominated by these low L points, which are BMR, and that this is plotted in log L. You will probably never see CMB plots in log L ever again. If you plot it linearly, doesn't look all that good. This is why you show plots like this, and sort of people would snicker about CMB data, and this is just compressed into some band powers. If you actually show the data, of course, it gives a very misleading impression of bad agreements, with active agreements as
more than us. If you want to do astronomy, you have to do a log log.
Yeah, but you just call it something else and then plot it linearly. this is of course the target. We're trying to distinguish a whole bunch of models like this. I won't go into any detail at all about what these are, although we've heard surprisingly little about this is the conclusion. This is what happens when we combine Maxima 1, B98, and BMR in a maximum likelihood Bayesian fashion into a bunch of band powers. So the same sorts of techniques that were used for the purple band powers a couple plots ago, for those three data sets, things don't change a whole lot if you add in all the other CMB data, because this has lots of statistical weight. These are a couple models that fit the data pretty well. Lots of other models fit the data pretty well, but in particular, models of omega equals 1 fit the data. So these are binned with a maximum bin. So the binning of the two experiments is different. One of the important systematic effects that I think it's safe to say has not really been explored is the binning. So here's maxima alone. Overlay too. Adrian, if you stand in front of that, then we can see.
Oh.
Ah, good. So there actually is. What it does is it increases the statistical weight of these points. And in fact, shows that they're in agreement, basically. It's not dragging them together. So that means that the two data sets are consistent there, which is good. So that's, we'll be getting back to that. We'll be getting back to that towards the end.
Third point in
from
the left at L is 150.
You have the larger error
point bar than either data set alone.
Third point in at L is
150. Right there. Isn't that error flag larger than either from either stern alone?
That's
a lot away from max, right? Because they're wider bin. That bin was out quite a bit.
Yeah, so this, there are binning effects. These are not uncorrelated, right? The error bars are correlated between these bins. If you decorrelate the error bars, the effective window functions get wider, but the error bars get smaller.
And the beam uncertainty
is included. Obviously, not a real big effect.
But actually,
it is an effect. Okay, we'll get back to the answer later.
A visual issue here,
yeah.
Which is that how do you show well highly correlated data? So you can go to orthogonal, but orthogonal is from getting back to the same impression. It turns out that the best representation is
because the binning is different, the correlations are actually larger than in either data set because you split bins from one another. So this is the sort of naive view that people like Lloyd and Dick and I had of how one would do, and Max, with how one would do data analysis, before we ever talked to data. It's pretty simple. There aren't that many blocks on here. You start with an experiment, end up with cosmology, you do a few things on the way. I added this in late as a stop to the experimentalist. Okay, yeah, we knew we had to do some things before we got the time stream. But after that, all the real important stuff happens. We get the map, we get the CL, and, we get the cosmology. I quickly learned that this is closer. I tried to put in the arrows here, but you couldn't see any of the things that you actually do if you put in the arrows. Of course, the really important part is the top and the bottom. So you heard a lot about all of this stuff from the people that you've heard from the last three talks.
gradient.
This each of these is like six different programs, right? So it's a huge job to do this, and talk a little bit about some of the interesting parts. But to take a very large overview of what we do, basically we apply this important theorem, Bayes' theorem, again and again and again and again, through the data pipeline, asking successively more refined questions of the data. So Bayes' theorem, of course, as you all recall, the probability of some set of parameters given the data is proportional to the probability of the parameters given your prior information, times the probability of the data given the parameters, which is the likelihood. So you can ask, you could put in anything you want for the parameters. You could ask about the price of tea in China, and you won't get anything interesting out. But if you ask, given CNB data, what is the best map, or the best power spectrum, or the best cosmological parameters, of course, you get lots of stuff out. Now, the reason why this stuff is hard is that generally, well, this used to be true. It's not actually so true anymore. The signal to noise in the time stream is quite low, less true for Boomerang than previous things that I've ever looked at. But nonetheless, you can get around either high or low signal to noise. It turns out that very low is easy because everything looks like noise, and it makes it easy to estimate your noise, which Radek talked about a lot. Very high signal to noise, of course, everybody, everything's really easy the signal flow is high. Intermediate cases are more difficult and where we tend to live now. It's important to remember that at the end of the day, we care about a power spectrum, which is a variance, which is what noise is. So if you get the noise estimation wrong, you're biasing your result. That's why, as Radha talked about, we spent a lot of time and effort on getting those Radi curves to be well understood and to incorporate them correctly into the analysis. It's also hard to do CMB data analysis because it's a global analysis. As you know, basically you want to do a Fourier decomposition of your data. And Fourier decompositions are easy in certain cases when the operators can be written in nice ways, because we tend to do things in matrices. We think of these as elegant factorizations of matrices. The nicest one, of course, is the real FFT, but that only works for very simple geometries and very simple noise. For example, the math people have come up with something very similar to an FFT to apply to use their to do with their matrices in spherical harmonic space, which only works for their for very nice geometries and their very nice noise structure. But in reality, of course, you don't have a nice geometry, you don't have a simple noise structure, especially with these balloons. As you see, these are pretty complicated experiments, and you have to estimate the noise internally. So the upshot of this is that to do everything, basically, the operation count goes like the number of pixels cubed. A quick advertisement for the MATCAP package. Let's see. Massive data analysis for CMB anisotropy package or something. Written, of course, by Julian Borel. It has two main modules, one for making maps and one for doing power spectrum estimation. They are both very general, which is nice. That means that along the course of these analyses, we've had to do lots of more special purpose versions of all of these things, such as all of the stuff that Radek talked about earlier. Especially in the map making case. There's a new version 2.0 for those of you who care about that sort of thing, which adds in all of the stuff with offsets and copper templates and related things. File formats are all new, it's difficult. So, to back up, in reality, so you've seen all this before now from Radek. We want to estimate the sky signal given the time order data. Again, if we do this in a Bayesian way and just ask what is the best estimate of the signal given the data, we actually get out of the Gaussian least squares problem. We all know how to solve a least squares problem. We just invert noise, weight, the data, and then divide by the weight, which is effectively what this formula is, but with a matrix. The problem, of course, as we mentioned, is we have to estimate the noise. We don't know it offhand. The neat thing is that if you do it with the optimal n, so this is the choices for the matrix m in Radek's stuff before, if you do it with the optimal one, this is a sufficient statistic, which means that there's no other information about the sky except what is contained in these two things. As an amusing aside, if you ask a different question of your data, what is the most probable map given the data, but also given that you know that the power spectrum is some particular set of CLs, what is the map? Then you get out the Wiener film. If you've seen the Wiener film written out, you know what it is in this context. The dirty little secrets, though, this was largely talked about again by Radek. Again, we don't know the noise. We have to estimate it. We have to add in systematic effects like the chopper. We have to approximate this N inverse, either using things like Max's technique or the other things we've come up with. Also, this is slow, and it's nice to be able to make maps quickly out of your data. So we know that if you just want to do the least squares solution of a problem, you can generally do that in n squared instead of n cubed if you don't care about the noise correlation matrix. And Simon Prunet at CETA and Bart, Netterfield, and Dick have come up with a nice package for doing that. It uses some of the FFT versions of things, and it iterates to solve this equation. Of course, again, it doesn't give you out the noise matrix that you need at the end of the day. Given the maps, we can get to the CLs. The CLs occur within this correlation matrix M, different M than we've heard about before, sorry. Because I started doing this with Dick, everything is called C. So the theory matrix and the noise matrix, the theory matrix is a function of the CLs. Of course, this is a complicated, this whole thing is a complicated function of the CLs. So there's not an analytic solution for the best, for the maximum likelihood CL, but you can solve it in various ways, generally called quadratic estimators for historical reasons. That those of you who have been doing this long enough to have history will recall, and some of you don't really know about. This is the most computationally intensive step of the process at the moment, because it's the same n cubed as the map making, but there's a large refactor having to do with the number of L bins that you care about. So this is what the supercomputer spends most of its time doing at the moment. It turns out this is actually a much simpler problem, assuming, if we're willing to assume, Gaussianity of the CMB. Doing this is actually straightforward, albeit computationally intensive. The map making, it turns out, I think, to our surprise at the end of the day, was the hard part of the problem. Getting from the CLs to the cosmology has a few subtleties. You want to know the probability of some cosmology. Given the measured CLs, the error on the CL, say, called sigma L, and something about the shape of the likelihood function, we figured out a few years ago that it's easy to parameterize the shape of the likelihood function, we need to know that shape of the likelihood function, but we can do it. But you don't want to do a simple chi-square, it's sort of in the wrong order, so I'll get back to what it actually looks like in a couple slides. If I knew how to use this thing better, I'd be able to fix it. Talk briefly about non-Gaussianity, not the exciting kind of intrinsic non-Gaussianity of the CMB, but the boring statistical kind of non-Gaussianity that means these likelihood functions aren't Gaussians. So if you assume a Gaussian distribution describes the experimental noise, the amplitude, and the power, i.e. either whether or not you square it, if they're both Gaussians. Same for the CMB sky, same for the CL likelihood, same for the parameters. If you assume all of those things are Gaussian, then you get good estimates out of doing the so-called Fisher matrix analyses that we all love to do, and that Max is one of the first people to introduce to us. For a Gaussian, the curvature of the likelihood function is the same as the ensemble average curvature of the likelihood function. And so the mean and the median and the mode are the same estimate of whatever your quantity is. And the error bars derive either from the curvature of the likelihood function, the ratio, the traditional ratio of e to the minus a half, et cetera, give you the same error bars. And the integrated probability give you the same error bars. There's nothing magical about that. We define all of these for a Gaussian, and then we do that. We pretend that everything in the world is Gaussian, and then we get the same answer. But if it's not, of course, it's not the same. So what may be actually Gaussian here? Okay, the experimental noise, it is the sum of lots of little small quantities. So okay, the central limit theorem makes that probably Gaussian. The CMB sky, probably Gaussian, if inflation or something like it does it, or something else that adds lots of little small quantities to make the distribution. The rest of it, not really such a good approximation, so we should be more careful. Now nobody, I will apologize in advance for the people who've done this. They've never claimed that all this stuff was Gaussian. They've just said this is sort of a good estimate of the minimum the error bars could ever be, because that's what the Fisher matrix analysis said it says it is. But if then you go and say this is what the error bars are going to be, you've made it valid. Right, so I just said what Gaussian might be, what isn't Gaussian, everything. The CLs are fairly well described by a Gaussian, so obviously you can show the CL plots that we show. We show little error bars, and we kind of see that, okay, the model is a good fit or not a good fit, and that's not a stupid thing to do. It gets a bit harder, as you'll hear lots about tomorrow, because the likelihood space of the likelihood in parameter space is very complicated, very non-Gaussian, and not terribly highly peaked. So it is highly structured, and you have to be very careful about the answers you get. And aside for the aficionados in the audience, a Gaussian is... You might think that if a Gaussian, as you may know, is the maximum entropy distribution given a variance, then anything else, a Gaussian may give you the best estimate in some sense. But the problem is that the Fisher matrix equates the curvature with all the other estimates of the error bars. And if you estimate, for example, the noise from the tail of a white noise distribution, that's not the same as the actual variance. In fact, the variance for something with a 1 over f actually is infinite. So the appropriate Gaussian that is the maximum entropy, if you know that it's 1 over f, is infinitely wide. So that doesn't help you very much. Okay, this is an example of how non-Gaussian the likelihood functions are for, in this case, maxima. Let's see, what do we have plotted here that you can't see? The black, is a Gaussian approximation fitted to the curvature at the maximum. The red is the actual likelihood. The various horizontal and vertical bars try to give you some estimate of 1 and 2 sigma error bars. The point here is that definitely at 2 sigma, things are beginning to deviate, not unreasonably, but substantially from Gaussian. And down at 3 sigma, you're actually quite far from Gaussian. So you have to do this right. And so we promise that in the end, we will provide the information. So in other words, what if this, so we get this ansatz for this by assuming that the error on the CLs has two components, one from the noise, the experimental noise, and one from the cosmology.
So the actual shape of that would change if the cosmology had more or less cosmic variance. But the real cosmology is over the model of the
So I guess I'm now, no, this is not, this, the likelihood function is a, given the data, is a function of the CLs. Okay, so this is CL along this axis. This is likelihood along this, log likelihood along this axis.
Yeah,
I haven't told you. Cardinal sin, CL along this axis, likelihood, log likelihood along this axis. So this is the best fit. Maximum likelihood, say, CL for this particular L bin of maxima.
But if you change the data, then you're going to get a different curve.
We have only one data set, doesn't matter.
No.
Sure, this is the maxima likelihood.
The question
function
was about having more or less cosmic variance, so that's obviously a change in the data set.
But I can calculate this again for some larger data set, and I'll get a different answer, and
yeah.
I can do that, but you don't need to know that to do anything with this data. You need to know this to do things with this data. Right? But I guess I still don't know what your question was, Mark. But we can talk about it later. Same thing for B98. Same idea. These are just some random sampling of bins. Again, you know, you should be careful and do this right. But there are things that are clearly robust, right? I mean, 1 sigma error looks really good. The red and the black curves are very good to 1 sigma. But it means that, you know, you're never going to be able to reproduce the likelihood function with just 1 or 2 numbers.
Is this using a parameter?
Yes, this is using a parameter.
Okay, I have a question on that.
Okay.
In your parameter estimation, when you're testing a model with really high entropy, do you come in and recompute this likelihood function for this model with high cosmic variance? Or do you use exactly the same shape as you have for the data first?
I will say what I said again because I don't understand your question. but the likelihood function is a function of the CLs. It is this that is the red function of the CLs. That is all the information in the data.
He is the
yes
of
you. So this is this is an approximation to the likelihood function. That much is true. It is not exactly the likelihood function. It is not a perfect approximation to the likelihood function.
it really is true. This shape is feeling being folded in. But you would like to do something that wants to expand, which is that you're in great danger of doing what I'm saying. You can get it out of the mind as well.
So, let me illustrate. They're saying that you could use the copy frames of the model that you're comparing to rather than the data. That's what I'm suggesting. I would say no, but
this has that information in it.
That has that information.
It may not have it perfectly, but it's...
Look at the cosmic variance of the central point.
No.
The likelihood of SPL. You have a different theoretical SPL. You go to this plot, you look and say, oh, the likelihood is that. But if the truth is higher, then the cosmic variance is higher than that too. We don't know the truth. We just have the data and the likelihood. We don't see it.
You can't handle this.
Now you do.
There is a thing under the pink line that the pink line fits.
There's a black curve.
The pink lines are offset log normals and they're even
fixed. Yeah.
And the Gaussian.
No, so there's no. So, okay, so the dirty little secret here is we don't have an exact calculation of likelihood except for very few points in parameter space for this case. For the case that Lloyd, Dick, and I originally worked on, this is a really, really good fit everywhere. But for this case, the whole point is you can't calculate the likelihood function everywhere directly, so you need to use this approximation. But things are fairly robust to the extent that we can use the on to slightly separate topic because Douglas asked me to. Okay, this is just stuff you saw before. This is also stuff you saw before, but this is the topic that I want to talk about for about 4 minutes. This is our full 5-arc-minute map, not Wiener filtered. This is IRAS Derby, again, at a very different color stretch there, just so that you can see the features. And then, as promised, we fit for the amplitude of the dust on the right-hand side as a component of the stuff on the left-hand side. Versus, so this is a plot of frequency of a bunch of different channels in the maximum experiment. They have, as you've seen several times before, they have these ridiculous names, B something, C something. You don't need to know what those are. yeah, more C's. Dick was in the room at some point.
The word C here is in the basis.
Yeah, so I apologize. So these are the amplitude we see in these given receivers relative to that predicted by the FinkFinder model that nobody thinks is right physically from yesterday. But everybody agrees it fits the data really well. More evidence that it fits the data really well. It fits our data really well. 410 gigahertz, well, it fits it perfectly well within statistics there. 400 gigahertz, sort of too good to be true. 240 gigahertz, pretty good, almost too good to be true. Reasonable scatter, finally, out at 150 gigahertz in the CMB channels. So it's not very well observed there, but we do see sort of things consistent with what you expect. But again, it's not a very high amplitude signal. As Adrian said, this is micro K on top of our CMB signal. If you go through the exercise of attempting to subtract this out, it has no effect on the CLs, much less than 10% of an error bar, something like that. Back to maxima. I'm going to talk very briefly now about maxima parameters. You got this earlier. This is a lovely plot from the paper, this kind of color. We estimated parameters. Now, so the next few talks, I assume Max will probably mention this. I know that Dimitri and Dick will mention it tomorrow. It turns out, and I don't think we appreciated this really at all until a few months ago, the whole game for parameter estimation from the CMB data that we have is priors. You need to determine what set of models you're willing to look at if you want to get detailed conclusions out about individual parameters. There are lots of things that are robust about the data, but there are lots of things that are not. So as a first case study, let's say, we allowed omega in matter, omega in baryons, omega in lambda, and the scalar tilt to vary over these ranges shown there. We let either the Hubble constant vary over that range, so that's supposed to be 0.9, or omega the h squared vary over this range. Enough, all of these together are enough, given what we know. Either of these is good enough. We basically assumed no reionization. In future work, this will be changed. It matters in particular for a lot of the interesting models. It turned out the BMR results are the ones that actually see the tau C, see the reionization. It actually is just an overall factor for the degree scale data, but it isn't an overall factor for the BMR data. So you have to do that correctly. What I'll show here, for the first few slides, is does maximization rather than marginalization. If you don't know what that means, don't ask. You saw this plot before. This is the likelihood for omega BA squared, omega in CDM and NS. Again, the disagreement with the purported BBN value is a matter of spin. Whether this disagrees or agrees depends on what you think disagreement or agreement is. Clearly, we need to sample this better. Omega total also seen slightly lower than omega equals 1, strongly dependent on the priors. Again, same thing as before. Maxima plus COBE, if you add in the other stuff, the supernovae, you get these nice locus of curves there. Yeah, so basically there are degeneracies in this data, so you can never, what you'd like to do is you'd like to be able to say, okay, here's my box of parameters, there's no likelihood outside the box. That's impossible to do. What parameter is most important? I think Dimitri will probably talk about this a little bit. Sorry, what prior shifts omega total the most? H naught is probably the.
The biggest issue is you have a very large database. It picks up another solution, which you might call non-cosmological,
So there's a huge other solution space, but even within the sort of interesting solution space, it doesn't take much changing of the priors to change the results, certainly within a one sigma. For example, I think my plot, yes, of course they don't overlay because different people produce them, but this is with a different set of priors that Dimitri and Don will talk about tomorrow. And as you can see, the thing, it migrates to slightly closer to flat, which is amusing. But the, you know, something is very robust. It's still clearly, obviously, at the right place. not all of you laughed at first, so you didn't realize how ridiculous a statement it was. If we add in some other cosmological information on large cell structure, that is the shape of the power spectrum and the amplitude, which largely constrains omega, yet basically in this plot, and that's not all it does. You start to hone in separately from the supernovae. You start to get rid of this stuff out here. This which is kind of neat. It's beginning to be the case that we, after, you know, oh, year and a half or 2 years of actually thinking we needed the supernovae to do stuff, we're beginning to think that actually there's concordance, and you really do have different data sets that are unrelated, that two of them agree with the third, not just two things like that. Kind of neat. The last one actually was marginalizing.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. If you cut out this whole second set, it's not a bad approximation. So just to reiterate, I think, in a slightly different way what Dick just said, for example, the best fit model, all the individual parameters that are the best fit model may individually be, and I use this word highly guardedly, ruled out by the results. But obviously the best fit model is the best fit model, and if that were the universe, that would be okay. So I said a lot of this already. You've seen this plot several times. You will probably see it more. These are, again, the data sets adjusted by what is, in this case, one calibration sigma in the enclosing direction for each of the two data sets. We've done it in a bit more detail using the band powers that we saw, or perhaps seen a few slides again. And actually, it turns out that you don't need to move them quite so far. You tend to be dominated by stuff out here a little bit. And Maxima doesn't like to move quite as much as this, but those are all small
details. Were those one sigma movements justified by some calibration? No. Yeah. No.
They are, the calibrations want them to be 14% apart.
Okay.
Right? And
so
if we...
You can move them 1% each other.
No, but we wanted, this was to get them to match. That was the point of this plot.
Right.
Yeah.
The calibration.
If we,
I mean, maybe it's different.
One of these percent apart.
There's no agreement. But the flip side is that very the nominal baseline, there's two sigma apart.
Yes.
And in fact, if you look at any piece of it, it's much more than that.
Not any piece of it. Some pieces, yes. Other pieces, no. Right. I mean, basically, we fit so that it looks best here. And yes, so. Clearly, maybe there's something going on here. Maybe not. It's not a ridiculous fit.
Yes,
it's
the
numbers that I want.
Perspective. It was done not by the maximum team. So it was done by the maximum team, who did not have access to the correlations and so forth and so on. And it was just done to alert people of a remarkable similarity and not.
Well, some, if it depends on spin. I mean, some people.
All
So I think we're clearly dominated by systematic errors. I think there's no doubt that as John said, and probably as we've all said, clearly there are unaccounted for systematics that have to be dominating in some sense, in that, you know, otherwise we'd be perfect. I mean, the statistics are what they are.
Have you estimated
chi-squared
or something like that?
So this is the chi-squared on the bottom there. For degree of freedom for these fits versus that data, right? So there are lots. That's why the number of degrees of freedom are actually so large, or so small. So they're not great. They're not wonderful.
Funny thing about that is you assign 21 degrees of freedom to the DMR.
21 degrees of
freedom. Yeah, I guess. 29 minus 8, that's the difference for the DMR. 21 degrees of freedom for the DMR power spectrum. Yeah, sure. So only plotted as 1 point.
That's only plotted as 1 point, but in the analysis, it's put in correctly. Really doing it to this in this at the same time. We've thought about it.
What do you mean? You mean run them through the FCAP together?
No, just but separately.
They really just want to do it with the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, just a shipment to a feature of the internet or not. No, but you don't want to. I know you're leaving in.
Yeah, okay, you guys can talk about this. Two good fitting models, one of which is flat. Lots more good fitting models, none of which are bad fits to the data. I'm being pumped over quickly, that's fine, real quickly. This is all stuff you'll see tomorrow. This is also stuff you'll see tomorrow, but it's interesting, so I'll briefly talk. Same thing as before, but this data, all of it. Also, now if we add large-scale structure, we see things are really exquisite even without the supernova. Supernova helps a little bit, but Boomerang IV8 Maxima 1 and large-scale structure are really great alone, and that's the punchline. So thank you for bearing with me, and Max is up next.